Burke. A very happy birthday to Mike Burke. To see our 30th anniversary celebration with Angela Davis and Bruce Springsteen, with Patti Smith and Michael Stipe and Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Musab Abu-Toha, the playwright V, and others, go to democracynow.org and check out our travel in the coming days as Steal the Story, Please, the documentary about Democracy Now! Travels the country starting April 9th here in New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hey everyone, I'm Shay from Planned Parenthood. Here are some fast facts about abortion. Abortion is really common. Chances are you know someone who's had an abortion. In the United States, about 1 in 4 women will have one by the age of 45. Abortion is extremely safe. Abortion is safer than getting your tonsils out or your wisdom teeth pulled. And abortion doesn't increase your risk of cancer, infertility, mental health issues, or any other health problems. The majority of people who get abortions are already parents. 59% of people who have had abortions have had at least one childbirth experience. Most people in the U.S. think abortion should be legal by a wide margin. 80% of Americans want abortion to remain legal, even in states where politicians pass laws against abortion. For more information, visit PlannedParenthood.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's Radiothon. Please show your support for this amazing place and keep programs coming. Go to WUSB.FM, click on the pledge button, and pledge whatever you can afford. It's time now for Off the Wall. Yes, it is another episode of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. That's it's a fine spring day.
It's a lot more, let's say, warm, I guess.
Yeah, that's a word.
It was supposed to rain all week, I thought. I was looking at the weather the other night, just looking at the week, but it's not totally rainy. I heard rain when I was, like, waking up, and that was kind of nice,
yeah.
And it was on and off overnight, but it seems pretty dry. It's mostly just sort of warm.
No, it's not raining right now.
No, not at all.
We're wondering what's going on, so if anyone knows what's going on with the rain, let us know, because we need rain. No, we don't really need rain, we just want rain.
Well, if you have any, like, spring flowers or things that you're anticipating that are growing, you have to supplement that sometimes. So, yeah, if it doesn't get enough natural moisture from the rainfall, then you have to kind of go out and supplement until we do get some.
Tomorrow is April. So, yeah, we're really tearing into spring. No question about that. And tomorrow's also April Fool's Day, so you might want to just not be too vulnerable to whatever people tell you. Although today, you know, these days, I don't believe half of what I hear. I really don't.
Why is that?
It's all just too crazy. It's all just, I mean, you pick anything from the news, and it's, you know, 20 years ago, nobody would have believed it. And today we're supposed to take it as gospel. Just with current leadership and direction we're going in and the things that we get all caught up in that we care about, supposedly care about, it's a bit much for anyone to handle. We get that.
Well, what are you thinking about that? Like, does the moment need, I mean, I think a lot of people find escape in the moment. I think you're more, you have an eye for, like, organization, but, like, we're being too kind of passive about the current state of affairs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel that way.
In general.
I feel people are being way too passive, and that, you know, it's a great entertaining TV show, but it's causing real harm and damage. I mean, right now we're in a war and nobody seems to care. The only thing we seem to care about is if the gas prices inch up by a few pennies. Honestly, folks, gas is way too cheap. It really is. In other parts of the world, it's twice, three times even more expensive than what we're paying for it. We shouldn't be enslaved to fossil fuels. We should be looking for alternatives. It's not the enemy. It's the future. And, you know, just caring about what you're paying at the pump, you're missing the entire point that there's all kinds of injustices and horrors going on in the world that we are paying for with our tax dollars. And the things happening right now in Iran, that's not even in first place right now, because there are still so many other horrible things happening in the world. So, you know, we have to pay attention. We have to read a lot. We have to listen a lot. We have to seek out facts, because they won't necessarily be presented to us. And we have to look at everything with a critical eye, including things that we believe, because what we believe may not be correct. And, you know, we say that all the time, being open to being wrong. I think that's how you learn, and that's how you find other people that have gone along that same journey. And only then do you have a chance of actually doing something that changes things for the better. I can't be more specific than that. I mean, okay, going to the protest this weekend, that was good, that was nice. I got to say, and I don't want to be negative about it, like, you know, the New York Times. I was looking at the New York Times, and they had a headline like, more people showed up than ever before against President Trump. But will it be enough for Democrats? I mean, they always have to inject this negativity. Can't we just have a day look at all these people. This is amazing. Let's focus on that. Instead, what you get, you know, okay, let's talk to two of the 8 million people that are you know, anti-Trump. And then let's talk to two of the people who weren't even there who are pro-Trump. You know, that is what media has been doing for the past decade, is both siding everything and making everything equal and fair. It's not fair. It's not equal. There are worlds of differences here, and we have to recognize that. Just because somebody disagrees does not mean their opinion is equal to somebody who agrees. And, you know, facts matter in situations like that. We can't be afraid to do investigation and say, Yeah, okay, you can keep saying that Trump won the election in 2020, but here are the facts. Yeah, you know, we're not going to keep repeating ourselves. Here are the facts. You keep reading them and telling yourself that what you're reading isn't in front of your eyes. We waste so much time going over the same things. And I think that's part of a strategy that the other side has. Wasting time, you know, just saying what has been proven, you know, so many times, and just continuing to go back to that, forcing you to debate the issue yet again and not be involved in something maybe a little better, maybe a little bit more meaningful at this point. So, what was your question? Doing something effective, something good, something meaningful. Was that it? Well, let's say it was.
For instance, sure. But I was just looking at the larger point being made. I think it is a sort of strange thing to endure the moment we're in, and get, you know, more confirmation of the things that many people anticipated. I think that's been nauseating.
Mm-hmm.
About this conflict, yeah, like the environmental issues that you raise, I think I'm really conflicted on a lot of different levels, on the amount, on the kinds of warfare being waged. I think I would like to get numbers. Like, I'd love to know. I imagine someone somewhere, somehow we're keeping track of the amount of pollution from the kinds of war that is being waged, because a lot of the infrastructure, this includes Ukraine, I think, has had to do with
mm-hmm.
burning fossil fuels. This is also going on in the Mideast, whether it's supporting the infrastructure of war or actual asymmetric sabotage where you're just burning tank farms.
Do you know?
That's great, but also terrible for the environment.
Right.
And then you talk about this strait as we're currently forced to talk about raising gas prices. Yeah, I would like, if we're going to burn fossil fuels, for it to be in some kind of emissions controlled device that actually supports people getting around, or isn't just burned for the sake of it. But then, you know, there's aspects of warfare that I can forgive or understand, at least. And that's itself a conflicting. Do I want to see high gas prices for everyone? No, not really. I don't think anybody does. Do I want to continue to support the fossil fuel industry when there's great alternatives? Not really. No, not
mm-hmm.
I mean, sparingly. But I think they've had their day. I think there's plenty of alternatives. We shouldn't be so susceptible.
There are plenty of alternatives, and they're being attacked as if they're the enemy. You know,
wind farms,
solar. You know, people being penalized for having these things under this current administration. That is a situation that we are in right now. There are solutions, and we are being pushed away from the solution so that we can become enslaved to fossil fuel for a bit longer.
Yeah, and it's then also being combusted just openly.
And that's another thing. Yes, we are deliberately targeting critical infrastructure. You know what? That is a war crime. If you deliberately target critical infrastructure that hurts the population of any country, that is a war crime. We do it with impunity. Trump is bragging about doing it. He says we're going to destroy all the plants. Israel does it as a matter of course. Nobody seems to care. At least, you know, the bullies of the globe don't seem to care. And they get away with it. And that's the thing. We let them get away with it. And we don't have to. We don't have to as people. You know, we have a say. Yeah, we saw 8 million people in the streets on Saturday. That was great. That was amazing. Yeah, we can do more. I'm not going to ask the Times question and say, is it enough? It's fine. But it needs to continue. And we need to have that conversation. I just don't want to come back in six months and say, oh, now there's 9 million people. We're still not accomplishing anything. Not to say we're not accomplishing anything. We are. I'm impatient. I want to see it happen faster. I also want to see more inclusivity here, because I got to tell you, you know, we were out here in Suffolk County on Saturday. One day we're going to make it to the Manhattan rally where they had, I think, 650,000 people. But, we saw three of them, actually. We went to Medford, Miller Place, I believe, and Port Jefferson Station. Here's my problem. They only last a couple of hours, and some of them are pretty damn early. Some of them, they start at 11 and they end at 1. What kind of a rally on a Saturday in good weather ends at 1 o'clock in the afternoon? Come on, do it all day. Stay all day. Clog the traffic. Make a commotion. Be visible. So many people showing support everywhere in all three places. People honking their horns in a friendly way. Yeah, there were some people honking horns in a nasty way, including idiots with the train horns. How is that legal? How do they get away with that? How do they have train horns on their damn pickup trucks? I don't know, but people trying to be intimidating and being obscene and all. One guy was yelling at me for some reason. I wasn't even at the rally. I was in my car. I was a passenger. Actually, you were driving. And this guy just starts saying we're anti-American, you know, just spouting all this crap, you know, talking points from Fox. And, you know, there's nothing I can say. The only thing I said to him was, you know, go buy a tank of gas, all right, because that's all that's left for somebody like you. And just close the window and moved on. I don't know why we were targeted. Maybe we just look like we belong, which is fine. That's a compliment. We need to be more disruptive. That's how I feel. This goes for the population here, and this certainly goes for the population in Israel. That government should not have lasted a day, let alone the number of years it has lasted and the hell that it has caused and will continue to cause, not only to everybody surrounding the country, but everybody within the country, except for the people that celebrate this kind of thing. Unfortunately, there are a large number of people like that. I don't know. I'm worried about the future of that country. I think it might not last if this continues. And here, we might take the whole world with us if we're not careful. I mean, have you seen any of these Trump news conferences where he's asked questions about the war and he just has no opinion? He has no knowledge. Meanwhile, you have people like RFK Jr., claiming that he saw Trump draw a map with a magic marker that was a perfect map of the Middle East. Honestly, I don't know anybody who can do that. But he claims he saw this. I don't know what kind of hallucinogenics he was on at the time, but he claims he saw that and that he knew how many troops were in each place. Nobody has ever seen anything like that from Trump. What we see is him trailing off and talking about curtains or ballrooms or some perceived slight from 20 years ago. The guy is incompetent. And, you know, those of you out there who say, oh, he's the best president we've ever had, please, please be real, at least to yourself. If you're not going to say it out loud, watch the guy. Look at how he handles situations, how he talks, how he answers questions or doesn't answer questions, and at least be honest to yourself and say, okay, I'm holding my breath until somebody more competent is in charge. And I'm hoping somebody is there now that can stop him from causing real damage. It's just, it astounds me how people in public can kiss his ass and just lie, say the emperor has clothes on when he does not, and just, you know, celebrate this kind of thing, which is detrimental to what this nation is supposed to be all about. You know, we always thought that couldn't happen here. And the fact is, it can happen here. It is happening here. We differ on how to get out of it, on what the solution is. But I think, I hope, as sane human beings, we can all agree this ain't right. This is something that is potentially disastrous domestically and internationally. Look, you know, when Biden had his troubles expressing himself and staying awake during a debate, which I still say the debate started kind of late, and he's up at 5 in the morning, so I could sort of see why that happened. Whatever. It's water under the bridge. But Democrats were very quick to acknowledge that, yes, this is a problem. We have to do something about it. I think to a fault, you know, they basically have said things like, you know, he's not competent and you know, needs to be replaced. And I don't know. We need to see more of that from the other side as well. Okay, well, as soon as I was going to go back to Carly, left the room, so here I am with nobody to bounce off of. Oh, he's back.
Oh, really? It was my turn. It didn't really feel like it. Do you want my comment about something?
Yeah, that's why you're here, Kyle.
All right. You were talking about Biden?
For a second.
Having trouble or something? Yeah, sure. It is pretty farcical as far as a leadership thing, and they're covering, I think, I want to say 10 times as much, but they're covering a lot more than I think people just let Biden do what he always does and lead and just try to help him as much as they could. So this seems like there's this like open fawning and all this other like authoritarian stuff layered in to kind of just accommodating every whim. And I don't know what else to say about it. It's so plain and apparent, and I've talked about it over and over again.
We all see it.
I don't know what else to add to this. I'm thrilled people went out. What I was going to say like a while ago was I think that the action is great, but it needs to diversify, become other actions. You say disruptive. I don't know. That means different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to be specific with that. But, yeah, in good trouble and good kinds of, I guess, stories or other gatherings or demonstrations that are not a part of this that focus on specific issues or I don't know. Like I think some of the success has been judicial wins. I mean, you've pointed out a couple of different cases that have had successes in the last week or two. Those are kind of just sort of quietly occurring, but it's not insignificant. And there's definitely people going to bat behind the scenes, looking through a lot of the policy and maneuvering and really checking it and then building cases around the indiscretions there and then sort of also kind of holding up norms to law and saying like, okay, well, maybe there's a norm here that was broken, but did this also violate standing legal statutes? I mean, there's really important work being done
right.
That I think, yeah, just because it's not literal waves of people in the streets and huge actions that just shut down in the form of like a general strike. I mean,
I'm glad you brought that up.
There can be many different versions, but I think you're right that it can't just be that we have this practice of being disruptive when it's, you know, convenient for a little teeny window of time that gets some honks and some screaming. It's really got to diversify. It's got to be meaningful. It's got to be something that translates to political action when the elections come up, but also day to day, like we got to put pressure on industry and pressure on the institutions that are doing the covering for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, this is not normal. It's not like, you know, one side versus the other. It's basically falling into a pit or being pulled out of it at this point. Yeah, I know that Democrats are filled with all kinds of flaws. I know that. And we can spend time analyzing all of that to death as if it is the same kind of thing that we are currently living through. But it's not the same. And we have to basically hit the restart button and save ourselves before this really, really gets out of hand. I mean, the guy's only been in office now a little over a year. And look at the chaos that we're already experiencing. How do you think we're going to be in another three? It's scary to even consider. It really is. But you mentioned a general strike, and that is exactly what people are planning on May 1st. And my only advice is that if we're going to do this thing, let's do it right, all right? Let's shut this monkey fighter down. I'm sorry, I'm using the G-rated Die Hard on commercial TV version. You know what I mean. But let's do that. It's a Friday, May 1st, and, you know, we can show our power by just stopping everything. I'd like to see that. But if we don't have the numbers, if we don't have, you know, the passion behind this, it's not going to work. In fact, it'll cause harm because everyone will seem weak. It'll seem like there is no passion. And I know there is. People just feel helpless. They feel like they can't do anything. Well, there's a lot we can all do. If we set aside petty differences and work together and raise our voices, let's not be afraid to raise our voices. I don't get how such nonsense, not just from Trump, but from all his underlings. You know, you look at these super defensive press conferences they have, Hegseth and all those people, and nobody calls them out and says, you're a damn liar, and here's the proof. You know, it just causes a real stir. Yeah, they don't want to lose their clearance, I know. But at what point does that become meaningless? At what point do you have to say as a human being, this is wrong? What you are doing is absolutely wrong, and it's a lie. I mean, look, let's use some local examples involving the environment, all right? The EPA, led by Long Island's own Led Zeldin. No, somehow I got Led Zeppelin in there. He might as well be made out of lead because he seems to worship it. Lee Zeldin, the horrible things he is doing to the environment. The EPA is seeking to loosen rules on cancer-causing gas used at a specific Long Island site. Yeah. This comes from Newsday. To reduce cancer rates, the Environmental Protection Agency, I repeat, they're called the Environmental Protection Agency, under Joe Biden, these rules were imposed to reduce cancer rates on a cancer-causing gas used to sterilize medical devices. So we know all this. We know it's a cancer-causing gas that, for some reason, is used to sterilize medical devices. There are 88 facilities in the United States, including one in Hopog, and they would be required to continuously monitor their outputs of ethylene oxide. If you have any ethylene oxide in the house, get rid of it safely. Required technology upgrades would reduce emissions by 80% to 99%. Well, Zeldin's EPA is proposing rescinding those rules entirely, calling them unfeasible and unattainable. Really, Lee? They're unattainable? We can't do this? We're forced to have this poison to breathe in, to cause death, untold suffering? We can't do it. We give up. That's your message. The EPA's announcement said ethylene oxide is the only safe and effective sterilization method available for many medical devices. Safe. You know, I've never heard something that is known as a cancer-causing gas referred to as safe before, but apparently the definition of that word is expanding. But here's the argument against the Biden rules. They would threaten the domestic supply chain of medical equipment. No, I didn't hear anything about cutting back on the supply chain. I just heard that it has to be monitored and the levels have to be reduced. But this plan is the latest in a series of efforts to ease regulations on industries and weaken standards on air pollution, including fine particulate matter, mercury, greenhouse gases. Now, Long Island Sterilization, this is the name of the company, Long Island Sterilization? Oh, Kyle, we have to visit. Do they answer their phones that way?
Probably. I mean, it's important for one thing, but it's so crucial to actually put strictures on the way industry operates and such that they're in compliance. Because even with that, there's ways some of these places can make mistakes. They can mm-hmm. have malfunctions with equipment. or actually willfully try to get around some of these things with, you know, watering down numbers or tampering with things. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, even with good regulation, that we still have problems with stuff.
But they don't have to. They don't have to get around it because the Trump administration is doing that for them.
Well, and I think that's what's really, I think, the message in all of this is that they don't care about anyone living. That's, to me, I think their idea of what happens to other people downwind of like a plant. It's sort of like industrial Darwinism where like, well, you know, the way to not have that happen is to be rich enough not to live downwind of that plant. Mm-hmm. And the casualties of that weren't smart enough to make enough money to not live there.
Exactly.
That is their attitude.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about the class that they are speaking to is that they don't have to be in any one place. The transnational capitalists, right? Like they can just leave. They can just move real estate. They can be anywhere. They and of course won't live in places that are susceptible to that, and even will actively profit from wherever else their businesses operate or touch that hurt others. That's not important to them. Making money is irreverent to whomever is a casualty in that process. They have succumbed to, yes, they'll say, okay, it's a tragedy, like, for instance, the effects of a climate or some disaster. They don't attribute it to human cause action. They don't want to admit that. They will never, they'll never try to prevent it happening to other people because it doesn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think really the pressure is money. You have to put regulations in, and you have to like actually affect the bottom line to even get the attention.
But that's exactly what happened. They did put regulations in. It did affect their bottom line, and they're crying to the Trump administration. And, you know, the Trump administration is paying attention to them, not the people.
Right.
I mean, it's not like cancer is really an issue, right? I mean, it's not like people are getting cancer. Are they? Not that I've heard of. No, we're fine.
That's a lie.
You're lying. No, I am not laughing. I know
you're being facetious, but
thank you.
It's a lie. And even to like put that in the ether, I think it's not even funny. Cause like, I don't think that anyone who really wants a business to be successful, that they want it to be the type of business that is so damaging to the populace.
It's bad for business. I don't think they give a crap. I really don't.
No, they don't.
And they're being told that's okay. Anyway, let me finish this. Long Island Sterilization and its parent company, Bus Hospital Disposables, operate at 2 addresses at an industrial park in Hauppauge. They employ 260 people. They manufacture, sterilize, and sell 18 million medical devices a year, including surgical drapes, trays, and suction products, which are used in hospitals, doctors' offices, and nursing homes. According to this Newsday story, they did not respond to multiple requests for comment. That's a red flag right there. But last year, Long Island Sterilization, at the invitation of the Trump administration, requested a reprieve of at least 2 years from the rules. It argued in an email to the EPA, obtained by the nonprofit Environmental Defense Fund, that's a group that actually cares about the environment, that the upgrades will be quite costly for our company, and the purchases would need to be made in stages. Well, boo-hoo, it's going to be costly to prevent poison from getting into the lungs of people. And it's just disgusting that this is what the Environmental Protection Agency sees as a priority. Now, there's even more. Brookhaven Town, the town that Stony Brook happens to be in, they're suing the State Department of Environmental Conservation. You know why? It has to do with a landfill. Now, this landfill is emitting toxic fumes, and causing all kinds of problems with the people who live near it. Brookhaven Town is upset that the Department of Environmental Conservation is telling them to clean up their act. They're saying, you don't have the right to tell us this. And that is where they are focusing their attention, on attacking a state organization rather than dealing with the mess. That's where we are right now. Now, the town and papers filed in October in state Supreme Court and updated last month said a newly enacted section of the state's environmental conservation law contains a municipal exemption provision that would bring to a halt separate state investigations of toxic plumes emanating from the landfill and Brookhaven Calibro Airport. The lawsuit states the DEC has no such authority to order cleanup plans at the landfill and the airport, adding whatever prior general regulatory authority the DEC may have previously possessed lapsed under the enactment of the municipal exemption last year. You know, this is insane. This is what taxpayer money is going for, to start a lawsuit against a state agency that is trying to clean up the environment. You know, instead, spend that money on cleaning up the environment. Why aren't we all on the same page here? I don't know how related that is to the cancer that the EPA has turned into, but it seems to be very much in the same vein, and it disgusts me. It really does.
So. Yeah, it's like it's so crucial because we have to kind of coexist. We live in a modern, industrialized, incredibly developed era. So we understand there is going to be pollution from human activity. So finding an equilibrium, I think, is the idea. But I think that's too humanistic for the kinds of leadership we're faced with. They really aren't interested in people. People are an inconvenience.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They're like, really, the more that die, and I mean this, the more that just perish straight up, it's better for them. It's more space. It's more property for them to accumulate and wealth to extract. And they don't have to look at them. You know, they can continue to live in their fantasy here on Earth of accumulating ever more capital and growing growth that is infinite. That's the attitude that we have to deal with because so much of government has been bought. And everybody's like got different answers and different ways to look at it. And I think it's really about what collectively do we want? Because that's the other side of what you're talking about being disruptive or being in the streets or what are our actions? What are we doing in this? And I think about this with people involved in technology a lot, but I think it spans like what is labor doing? What are people who are now at the effect in real time, like unable to make those kitchen table decisions, you know, are making, finding it hard to not make difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. They're perfectly able to, but they don't want to because this just is really concretely going to affect everyone. And I think that internally we need to like really examine what is it that we're asking? What do we want? People throw around like general strike or impeachment or accountability. I mean, it goes on and on. And I think what we do with the momentum and the kind of pain people are feeling is of real consequence to, get something out of how bad it's been. I mean, what we're dealing with is an incredible poisoning of our system socially, economically, politically. It's pretty awful. And I think, you know, we're just going to watch more sports or something, I guess.
Literal poisoning. That's what we're dealing with here. And, you know, if you're voting for something that makes things more polluted and increases health risk to people, you're on the wrong side. It's not hard. It doesn't matter what political party you're affiliated with. Don't do that. You know, is that really so hard? All right. Bad news for one Republican in the area. A state board today disqualified Republican Bruce Blakeman from receiving public matching funds for his gubernatorial campaign, dealing him a potentially huge blow in his run against Governor Kathy Hochul. If you recall last week, I suggested that Hochul step up and say, you know what, he didn't fill out the form properly, but give him the funds, you know, because I'm gonna kick his ass anyway. But that's not how the Public Campaign Finance Board saw it. A 4-3 vote along party lines. They ruled that the Republican Nassau County executive is ineligible because he filed incorrect paperwork to qualify for the matching funds program, which grants public funds to a candidate if he raises enough in donations from state residents. It's available to gubernatorial candidates for the first time in 2026. Now, apparently, he filed it wrong because he didn't include certification papers with info about his running mate, Madison County Sheriff Todd Hood, which is a requirement. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of telling that he's being disqualified because he only thought of himself. You know, he didn't think of his running mate, and that's part of the rules. There was a heated exchange today. The four Democrats on the board agreed with a staff recommendation that he was ineligible because of the failure to fill out the forms properly. The deadline for correcting the error was March 2nd, and the burden was on the campaign to be on top of the requirements and be aware of the mistake and to fix the mistake. The three Republicans on the board accused Democrats of using a bureaucratic snafu to punish Blakeman. They warned the vote could be challenged in a lawsuit. Okay, fine, you know, whatever. But don't tell me that these Republicans would not have done the exact same thing. We've seen it time and time again where they use the letter of the law to violate the spirit of the law. They do it all the time, and karma is a bitch. So, sorry, Bruce, it didn't work out this time, but we'll see. We'll see how the campaign goes. It's going to be something. It's going to be fun. Okay. This one I want to discuss with Kyle. I'm going to put it aside for a moment. We have some good news. Oh, here it is. Kyle, I want your opinion on this.
You know, I'm having real trouble. I don't want to have opinions to share. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't have the answers. I think a lot of people are within.
Well, this has nothing. Like, this has nothing to do.
I can't have an answer for everything.
Well, we're running out of time, and
you're gonna have to go to a new show. This we're done. I mean, it's just.
Well, this show won't be lasting very much longer. It's only out.
What do I have to?
Well, lawmakers in Albany are considering whether to allow wine and liquor to be sold in grocery stores across New York State. And I was wondering how you felt about that. Right now, they're sold in liquor stores and not, you know, like many states have beer and wine in aisles in supermarkets. We don't here in New York. I know that strikes people as strange. But now they're thinking about doing that, and it's causing all kinds of debate. Would you care to weigh in? In Washington, where you're from.
Yes.
You can do that, right? It's in supermarkets.
Yeah, and it actually was Costco that was pushing when they were trying to get liquor to be sold. I think it was outside of the state liquor stores. Mm-hmm. I think Costco and other stores put a lot of pressure on, or at least they were saying, like, look, we can do this. They wanted to have the ability to do that. And it did win, and so now, like, for most of my childhood, and just, I mean, it was always the state liquor stores, and everything else was, I think, just beer and wine were other places.
Okay. You can get beer in supermarkets here, but you can't get wine. And you mentioned state.
Wine was the same way.
State liquor stores. So your liquor stores are run by the state, unlike here. I mean, they're regulated by the state, but they're independent businesses.
Yes, it was that way, and I don't know. I think it was something that they wanted to move away from even more to allow grocery stores to sell even, like, liquor and stuff like that. But yeah, wine wasn't available, and then it was.
So the system we have here dates back to post-prohibition regulations that were designed to maintain separation between producers, distributors, and retailers. Kind of sounds like pot these days, the same kind of separation. But, you know, I had an opinion on both sides of this. At first, you know, I was saying to myself, you know, I wish it were easier to buy a bottle of wine because, you know, if you're trying to buy a bottle of wine at 8 o'clock on a Sunday, good luck, you know, finding a place that's open. Supermarkets are open, but you can't buy a bottle of wine there. And, you know, I would like it to be easier to do that, and this makes it easier if it's available in supermarkets. So, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But then I realized, or I actually, you know, read in the article, all of these independent wine and liquor stores. You know, we walk into a wine store, and somebody is there to advise you. You know, if you want them to. If you tell them to go away, they will. But, you know, you're looking for a particular, you know, wine from a region of Italy or something, and they will guide you to that. They can talk about it. You can have a long conversation with people about this. It's kind of cool. Sometimes they're from the region themselves. You can't do that in a supermarket, in an aisle of a supermarket. There's nobody there that knows anything about the wine. There really isn't. Maybe another customer. So that won't happen. Also, what was pointed out is that supermarkets have distribution deals with major wineries. And good luck getting something local in there.
Yeah.
Now, every single one of the people running these wine and liquor stores, it's going to be a fatal blow to them if people can just go to the supermarket next door or, you know, on the other side of the strip mall. Why would they go there? So their business is going to be basically slashed. And it's already gone down. You know, people are drinking less, so it's already been a challenge. I am not for something that puts a lot of independent businesses out of business. So right there, that to me is a fatal blow against this idea. What I would like to see, though, and maybe there's a way to do this, is more accessibility where, you know, I'm looking for that bottle of wine 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, and I'm able to find it someplace. Maybe the liquor stores are open longer. Or maybe, okay, how about this? You just have the commercial brand, a commercial brand, available in a supermarket, you know, that's not the top of the line, but it's good for an emergency. I don't know, something like that. Maybe we can think that way. But by no means should they be shutting down those stores or doing something that's going to hurt them. That's where I landed.
Yeah, they definitely would have the edge over, like, local distribution and stuff, just a wider selection. That's, like, I think the value that specialty shops would provide, and like you said, they've got people that can tell you a lot more about a particular region or a particular type of wine that you're looking for or that they might recommend, whereas in a grocery store you're really on your own, even if they do have a wide selection. So I hear the critique, and I think you might be right. Like, I think there's maybe some kind of balance where there's an availability of maybe certain wines. I think I remember grocery stores with, like, smaller wine sections where, okay, there's just a limited amount of just some whites, some reds, some something with bubbles. I mean, whatever.
Okay, make it very limited. Sure.
So it's something that if someone's doing meal planning, like building you know, all the ingredients to a dinner, they can pick up that bottle of wine, some bread, some cheese, whatever they're doing while they're in that store. So that's not uncommon. And there are bigger grocery stores that have opened up that do have wider beer and wider and beverage selections.
I just had a great idea. What if supermarkets could only sell local wine and it has to be local within, say, 50 miles?
Well, they do that with produce, and they'll feature, like, a whole bunch of different produce and indicate, okay, this is local. Or some places, they're just known for only really stocking stuff that's available from local farms. Those are all great, fantastic models, and you could easily bolster an incredible wine industry out on Long Island. And
you know
other
what that would do for
New
sales?
Yeah.
That would make more people become familiar with local wines, and their sales would go up. Meanwhile, the wine and liquor stores would get the benefit of having the more well-known brands or regions being represented as well as local.
Well, what about tariffs, though?
What about terrorists? There's no terrorists in Eastern Long Island.
If they're only doing imported wines, and then France gets like a huge tariff because somebody has a bad fish sandwich.
You know, I was trying to talk about one subject that did not have to do with Trump, and you brought Trump right back into the room.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, well, you said tariff, and that might as well.
Are we done yet?
Donald Tariff should be his name. No, the clock is still ticking. We have about another 7 minutes.
So we got more wine.
Sorry, it's such torture. It's torture for me. It's torture for everybody. We're all tortured together.
It's whining in a grocery store.
Here's some good news.
Just like everybody else.
You know, it's our radiothon, and we want people to support this radio station so we can bicker on into the future. You can do that by simply going to the website, WUSB.FM, going to the pledge button, and clicking it, and then pledging something on a monthly basis. That really helps us a lot. WUSB has been on the air since June 27, 1977, at about 5:30 p.m., or maybe it was 5 p.m. And, that changed everything around here, and it's been on the air ever since. And we need your support to keep being on the air. It is a challenge to run a non-commercial radio station, especially in this day and age. There was some good news today.
It ever not be?
Not the good
is
news.
Is there something hopeful we have to look forward to? Will it ever not be a challenge?
Yes, I'm trying to tell you right now.
Is it going to be easier? What do we have to look forward to?
Well, first of all, this doesn't really apply to us because we're not an NPR station, but a federal judge today agreed to permanently block the Trump administration from implementing a directive to end federal funding for NPR and the Public Broadcasting Service, PBS. U.S. District Judge Randolph Moss in Washington State, okay, ruled that President Trump's executive order to cease funding for NPR and PBS is unlawful and unenforceable. The judge said the First Amendment right to free speech does not tolerate viewpoint discrimination and retaliation of this type. It's good to hear those words. It is difficult to conceive of clearer evidence that a government action is targeted at viewpoints that the president does not like and seeks to squelch, he wrote. He noted that Trump's executive order simply directs that all federal agencies cut off any and all funding to NPR, which is based in Washington, D.C., and PBS based in Arlington, Virginia. The federal defendants failed to cite a single case, in which a court has ever upheld a statute or executive action that bars a particular person or entity from participating in any federally funded activity based on that person or entity's past speech. So
I hope this is precedent for so many other instances where they've created a scandal out of normal American ideals and used it to disrupt people's constitutionally protected rights. And I mean. This extends to so many other instances. I think many different things in the military, even though that system is wholly different, I think that this kind of ruling really should affect some of the other kinds of decision making that they've been doing that is really anathema to what we allow in our country. I'm thinking of the barring of press from the Pentagon, stuff like that. You know, I mean, there's just a lot more work to do in this vein, but that's encouraging.
It's encouraging, but, you know, as usual, Newsday leaves out the most important part of the story. What does this do for all the money that was taken? What does it do for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, which has ceased to be? The answer, after doing a little bit more digging, is not much because that money was, I love how they use the phrase, it was clawed back by Congress. In other words, they gave the money to public broadcasting, then they took it back. And they can't undo that. Congress can do whatever they want, and they basically said, we're not going to give you any money. That is not going to get reversed. Now, what can happen in the future is Congress can vote to fund them, maybe even make up for what they stole. I think stealing is the right word because they promised it and then they took it back. And that's not right. It's hopeful for the future. Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that's shut down. I don't think that's coming back. Maybe it will. I don't know. But it's hopeful. It means that there can't be a law that says you're not allowed to fund public broadcasting, which, you know, provides so much in the way of public services to so many communities, many of which are red communities, in case that matters. It's quite balanced in many ways. Yeah, if you're listening to an opinion piece that, you know, is liberal, that's going to be a liberal slant. But I've heard plenty of things that support all kinds of opinions and ways of life. You know, we shouldn't have to make this point.
No,
we've understood it for many years.
It should not matter.
No.
It should not at all that, oh, if this happens to be a district that I'm that I have power in politically, that's completely wrong.
Yeah. Anyway.
Care about people.
Yeah, and support WUSB, WUSB.fm. Click the pledge button and pledge something. Please keep the station going. Keep it strong. Hey, we're going to go out with a guy named Steve Goodman, actually, from the 70s. That's what this dates back to. Unfortunately, he didn't live past then, far past then. This is the guy who wrote City of New Orleans, you know, that song about the train that goes to Chicago from New Orleans and back. He was an incredible artist, incredible singer. There's one song that I've always wanted to play that could not be more outdated than this particular one. And I hope people find some happiness in that. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and we will see you here again next week. Good night.
Back in 1899, when everybody sang Auld Lang Syne, 100 years took a long, long time for every boy and girl. Now there's only one thing that I'd like to know. Where did the 20th century go? I swear it was here just a minute ago, all over this world. And now the 20th century is almost over, almost over, almost over. The 20th century is almost over, all over this world. About it in True Confession. I'm sorry I was late for the recording session, but somebody put me on hold. Has anybody seen my linoleum floors? Petroleum jelly and two world wars. They got stuck in the revolving doors all over this world. Almost over, almost over, almost over. The 20th century is almost over, all over this world. All over this world, all over this world. The 20th century is almost over, all over this world.
The winter's getting colder, summer's getting hotter, wishing wells, wishing for another drop of water. And Mother Earth's blushing 'cause somebody caught her making love to the man in the moon. Tell me how you gonna keep 'em down on the farm now that outer space has lost its charm. Somebody set off the burglar alarm, and not a moment too soon.
Because the 20th century is almost over, almost over, almost over. The 20th century is almost over, all over this world. Almost over.
got his toes a-tapping, standing in the window, grumbling and a-rapping. Everybody's waiting for something to happen. Tell me if it happens to you. The judgment day is getting nearer. There it is in the rear view mirror. If you duck down, I could see a little clearer. All over this world.